in Western North Carolina for much of it right now. There's no member of Congress representing this area. So because Mark Meadows has resigned and taken the job as President Trump's chief of staff. So what does it mean not to have a member of Congress?
So I think it's incredibly important that we don't have a member of Congress. There are two districts right now in the country, ours and a district out in California, where there is no sitting member of Congress. So first, of course, that means that there's nobody voting along with the interest of our district. In addition, when people have constituency service requests or casework requests, it's not real obvious exactly who to go to. If you go to the congressional website, you look up the 11th Congressional District, it says vacant. Well, it turns out that the House of Representatives clerk's office is actually the one that oversees all of these requests and kind of the way offices run these days. So I think, one, it confuses constituents about who they should go to, and then, of course, we don't have the voting representation that we would otherwise.
Given the pandemic, how much more does this add, I guess, a sense of disconnection for this particular district, which, again, as it's currently drawn, not as it will be drawn for next year, but as it's currently drawn, is most of the western part of the state?
Yeah, no, that's right. I think this is obviously a critical time for government. I think one thing we've all been reminded of is why government matters, why federal government matters, why state government matters. And so not having somebody in place right now during a confusing time where we're all depending on government, I think is confusing. I think it likely erodes trust in government in general. And it takes a region of the state that has tended to feel pretty disconnected from the halls of power, I think makes them feel even more so.
Well, something else the pandemic has done, it has delayed the runoff for the Republican nomination for the 11th District. It's now going to take place in June. Turnout was probably going to be light to begin with without the pandemic coming in May, as it typically is in runoffs. What's this going to do to the runoff now in June between Linda Bennett and Madison Cawthorn?
Yeah, so we've had our runoff delayed from May 12th to June 23rd. And so the Republican runoff here, we would expect fairly low voter turnout. So just to put kind of a mark on the wall, in 2012, we actually had a runoff in the 11th on the Republican side between Mark Meadows and Vance Patterson, Meadows' first run for office. And as kind of happenstance would have it, we had about the same turnout in the first primary. And so about 23% of the people who voted in the primary that round in 2012 voted in the second primary. And so my expectation is we will see numbers that are below that, probably numbers that may be below 20% of the initial turnout. I think first you've got questions, of course, about COVID-19 and how logistically people are going to vote. And you have just the information environment is, taken up by COVID-19 and those issues, and much less so about the primary.
If most, if not all, voting ends up taking place via mail for the not just for the runoff election in June, but potentially in November as we look forward to that. What effect is it going to have in North Carolina, again, that's going to be so important in the 2020 election nationwide? What effect is there going to be if, most of the balloting or most of the voting is done via mail-in ballot?
So normally about 5% of the voters in North Carolina choose vote by mail. So we've had this option for a long time. It's not a new option at all. But I think it's revealing a lot of these old fault lines in American politics, right? So in general, the Democrats have been more aggressive in wanting vote by mail. The Republicans have wanted less vote by mail. The Republicans tend to talk about security. The Democrats tend to talk about access. What's interesting is that study after study that gets done on vote by mail shows that there really is no clear partisan lean. You tend to get modest increases in political participation, less than one percentage point, but really no party tends to lead the way in vote by mail. One reason is because a lot of vote by mail is done by military folks that are overseas. So obviously those folks tend to lean Republican. So my guess is we really won't see much of a partisan differential if we do go vote by mail.
Effect on turnout, would it be higher, lower, about the same? Is there any study that has looked at this?
Yeah, so it tends to be a little bit higher. So there's a few states in the country that have gone completely vote by mail. They tend to be these West Coast states. And we found that those tend to increase voter turnout by, a little less than one percentage point. So it's a convenience thing. I think for most folks, it's a more convenient thing to be able to take a ballot and mail it in anytime. And so it does tend to increase turnout a smidge. But again, the types of people that turn out are not radically different in vote by mail versus other forms of balloting. So I don't think we're going to see a big partisan differential.
And last on this topic, given what happened in the 9th Congressional District in the last election with mail-in ballots, that adds just another wrinkle to this for North Carolina in 2020, if more people, or if all people, then have to go to vote by mail because of the pandemic.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So this, it's one of the interesting wrinkles on the story. Again, it tends to be the Republicans who are taking the kind of security side and the Democrats the access side. But the irony of this, of course, is that in the 9th Congressional District, it was the Republican Party that was accused of and convicted of ballot harvesting, or at least not the whole party was convicted, but one kind of party operative was convicted of ballot harvesting. So I think we're going to see a lot more questions about security. They're going to tend to be raised by the Republican side, but you know, there's some Democrats who are also concerned about that. So I think anytime we've got a big change like this in how people tend to be voting, you're going to get a lot of questions, and as we've seen in North Carolina, the potential of some lawsuits.
Right. And as we move on to the other topics, just a good time to remind everyone, regardless of the pandemic, anybody in North Carolina can request a mail-in ballot for any election. It is one of the states that does allow that. Starting now, looking at polls. A couple polls have come out this month, one right-leaning, one left-leaning, the right-leaning one from Civitas, the left-leaning one from PPP, showing very similar results except for one race. And the two results that were similar were the presidential matchup between Joe Biden and President Trump and the gubernatorial matchup between Democrat Roy Cooper and Republican Dan Forrest. What were your takeaways from these, from at least from those polls on these two particular races?
Yeah, so on those two, again, we've got a really tight race with Trump and Biden, I think, no matter which poll you look at. And we've got Cooper ahead of Forrest by pretty healthy numbers, really, in both of these polls. And so I think it's interesting. Again, a left-leaning poll and a right-leaning poll both showing some similar stories. If you dig a little deeper, too, I think you can see a little bit of what's happening here that's interesting. About 14% of Trump voters also say they're planning to vote for Roy Cooper, right? So Trump, obviously a Republican, Cooper a Democrat. About 14% of these Trump voters say they're going to vote for the Democrat for governor. The same thing does not work in reverse. So only about 1 to 2% of Biden voters, the Democrat, say they're going to vote for Forrest, the Republican, for governor. So it looks like right now incumbents tend to be doing pretty well in North Carolina, and that there is some crossover incumbency effect that's working across parties.
What makes that particular number interesting is something that you've talked about many times, and that is that, you know, the lineup between conservative and Republican, liberal and Democrat in voting patterns has become so uniform. So 14% is a pretty interesting number. What do you attribute that to?
You know, I think it's a very large number, and frankly, it's surprising, and you're right. I mean, so liberals tend to vote Democratic, of course, and conservatives Republican, and we know that, and that has been increasing since the 1970s. It's probably the primary story of American polarization. So if you're going to see 14% of folks who are willing to cross over like this, I think it's worth paying attention to. It may not sound like a huge number, but I think it really is a large number, particularly in a tight state like North Carolina. I think one thing that may be happening is that the COVID-19 pandemic may be benefiting incumbents. So it turns out that most North Carolinians in both of these polls say they're pretty happy with how the state is treating this issue. And nationally, folks are also pretty happy with how government is acting right now. So I think we may be getting this rally around the flag effect that is helping incumbents from both parties that happen to be in office.
The current governor, Roy Cooper, did win in 2016 by only about 50,000 votes and was able to get a few votes, as you were saying earlier, by you know, people who voted for President Trump but also voted for him for governor. Just a sort of a hypothetical question about this, given how other Republican governors in the South, particularly in the neighboring states where we out here in the West neighbor, Georgia, South Carolina, and Tennessee, have handled the pandemic very, very differently than how Governor Cooper and some other Democratic governors in the South have handled it. If Pat McCrory were still governor, how much different would this be? It's a very interesting thought about, you know, the outcome of that election in 2016, which was so tight.
It was incredibly tight, right? And so there are four counties in our state out of 100 that voted for both Trump and Cooper, right? So incredibly tight election. I think we can get some clues by just looking at Pat McCrory's profile today. He is not hidden from politics, despite the fact that he's not in elected office. And so he's certainly been tweeting and going in the media in Charlotte talking about his perspective on this. And big shock, it is not the same as Roy Cooper's perspective. I think he is much more in line with the Republican governors of our neighboring states. I think he's much more apt to want to open the state sooner. And so, yeah, I think we would be seeing some very different policies come out of our state if McCrory were governor. Our governor doesn't have a lot of formal power, but this is a time where governors can shine and where the choice of governor really does make a difference in our lives.
Lastly, the U.S. Senate race between incumbent Republican Tom Tillis and Democrat Cal Cunningham. That is the one race, those two polls we mentioned earlier, the Civitas poll and the PPP poll, were very different on. So tell us what those polls found on that race and what that kind of tells us about it.
Yeah, so again, those polls showed a lot of similar things, and those numbers I was citing before were remarkably consistent across those two polls, but there's this one race where that didn't seem to be true, right? So here you've got Tillis against Cunningham, Cunningham, of course, the Democrat, Tillis, of course, incumbent Republican, and here Civitas, the right-leaning poll, showed Tillis with a healthy lead. PPP, the Democratic left-leaning poll, shows Cunningham with much more of an advantage. So I think this one is also likely to be a bit of a toss-up, right? So we've got Trump-Biden, which is going to be incredibly close. The governor's race should be close, but I think Cooper right now is looking very good. And this Tillis-Cunningham race, who knows exactly what's going to happen? The money's been pouring in this race. It's one of the most expensive Senate races in the country. I think it's going to get much more expensive before it ends, as both parties think this is one of their keys to holding on to or gaining back the Senate.
Last question. If campaigning is limited because of the pandemic, you know, face-to-face, you know, actual campaigning like that, how much does that put Western North Carolina at a disadvantage of seeing candidates and even getting attention from them? Because statewide, obviously, a lot of focus would go to Charlotte and the Triangle. So would this in some ways hurt Western North Carolina as people look at this state in the fall as a place where people are going to come and campaign and really try to bring out ideas?
Yeah, I think Western North Carolina tends to be ignored in general. So if we even look at the Democratic primary before the pandemic was really here, we only saw Bernie Sanders visit, and I think he visited one time, right? Candidates tend to ignore our region of the state. And you add to it that it's a kind of a complicated media market that cuts across multiple states, so it doesn't always make the most sense to advertise here. I think this is likely to be another round where candidates will visit and pay attention to North Carolina because they have to. They may not pay attention to our part of the state. And I think that also is true kind of running through Appalachia in general. If you look at, you know, East Tennessee and Southwestern Virginia, you look at Eastern Kentucky, these are all areas that tend to be ignored by candidates. And I think in a tight election, it could really matter.